please welcome Ms. Solis for with her presentation on building healthy communities through community engagement and empowerment.
Hi, good morning.
Buenos dias.
No disclosures. I'm with the California Endowment, and we went on this path of building healthy communities. We started this place-based effort, planning around 7 years ago, and we're now into our fourth year of implementation. So we have some of our partners in the audience that I'd like to make a shout-out to from Riverside and Richmond. I'm not sure who else is here from our sites, but want to thank you for being here. So we're learning a lot through this place-based initiative. It's a 10-year initiative for a foundation to focus for 10 years. It's kind of a big deal. But we decided that it was important to make that commitment around community change. So we have invested in 14 communities across California, rural, urban, and suburban. The short story is that when we started out with the planning process, let me go back here, it was kind of messy. We said we'll provide planning support, logic model support, convening support, so folks in each of these communities can prioritize what are the local issues that they would like to work on. We initially had a social determinants of health frame, so all of the outcomes were related to one aspect of social determinants of health. And what we saw as we aggregated sort of what outcomes that folks wanted to work on, violence prevention came up on top. Economic development was big. The built environment was huge, as well as issues related to healthcare access and cultural competency in terms of access to care for low-income communities. So I'm going to spend my time talking about the connection with violence prevention, but just a little bit, and I think I won't spend time on it because I think Rachel really did an excellent job in sort of framing and making my job a lot easier in talking about the work. But as you know, place where you live matters a lot, matters a whole lot for low-income communities. And as we ventured in this work, again, being public health folks, we have oodles and oodles of data. And we also recognize that sometimes in public health, it's really hard for us to talk about work in a very simple way. So we work very closely with some wonderful communications folks that help us talk about the issues in an easier way in terms of looking at morbidity and mortality and just comparing zip codes to really sort of lift up this disparity that exists in education and in multiple other areas. So just a brief piece on sort of how did we land where we landed at the endowment in terms of our theory of change was really if we think about the traditional medical model, you know, it's emergency rooms, it's clinics, it's health education. When we think about the social ecological model, we're talking about neglected communities. How do we build power in place? Rachel's reference in terms of her concentric circle around power and people. Policies and practices, you know, how important it is to really push the agenda in terms of policy and systems change to work for communities. And I think what was interesting in Rachel's presentation is that in Ashley, the penultimate request that the community has was greater transparency in government. So again, the importance that community really understands that policies and systems change is really needed for improving community health. Changing the narrative. Again, we know that when you think of many low-income communities, there are certain narratives that come to mind. And we think at the endowment that that narrative needs to shift, that these are communities of opportunity, communities of innovation, communities that deserve investment. So changing that narrative. Again, when we think about it, it's inclusion, it's sustainability in these communities, it's a health and all policies approach, and it's looking at resilient and transformed communities. So we consider what we have there as drivers of change. So when we look at our work at the endowment, we're looking at these particular areas. So we call out, people power. We think it's really important that adults, parents, are civically engaged in their community. We think that it's very important to ensure that young people, the next generation, consider that their voice and their meaning in community, that they belong in community. Enhance collaboration and policy innovation. Again, I'm sure you've heard over and over again, you know, breaking down of silos, the need for folks to, you know, convene around a table. It's really, really hard work, because sometimes the way organizations or even local governments receive their funding, it's through particular silos and they have particular metrics that they need to meet. So it can make it challenging to collaborate. But again, for community transformational change, it's really important to come to the table with the resources that one has. Leveraging partnerships and resources. Again, there are other, when it comes to community, they want to leverage particular resources that already exist in their community. But are they optimized? Are they addressing the particular health disparities that communities identify? And then changing the narrative. It's not just a media approach, but it's really people telling their own stories, because we know it's very important for people to heal. Because of the multiple traumas that they've experienced. It could be, you know, displacement from gentrification. It could be slavery history. It could be segregation. It could be undocumented. People have long histories of struggle. And so acknowledging sort of that history is critically important in terms of changing the narrative and looking at the resiliency that comes out of that. So in our BHC process, we had about 20,000 people across the state that came out and sort of voted with their feet. We had one community in City Heights in San Diego that had about 500 people that came out to a stadium to decide how they would move forward with the initiative. So fast forward to today, we organize our work into sort of three campaigns. Rather than saying social determinants of health, I mean, this audience gets it and likes it, but the larger outside world doesn't necessarily think about social determinants of health. So we organized our work into health happens in schools, neighborhoods, and prevention. And so what you see up here are just the items that community identified as factors that impact violence. And so they told us, we need to focus on school climate, wellness, comprehensive supports in school, land use, safety, quality housing, food access, transportation, environmental justice, economic opportunity, public health, ACA outreach and enrollment, ACA implementation, health homes, and healthcare services. So pretty comprehensive list. But if we begin to drill down, what does it mean in terms of school? Well, what young people told us is that they feel that there is that schools are pushing them out of schools. And essentially, from their perspective, they feel that with the unintended consequence of zero tolerance, tightness in terms of truancy, that those policies and practices are having an unintended impact where young people do not feel welcome in school. And so they see them as drivers of pushing them out of school. And so a lot of work in community around truancy tickets, anti-bullying, wellness committees, really that has a broader perspective. Another piece that community really taught us about is restorative justice practices. How do we ensure that if a young person, you know, makes a wrong choice, that there is a safety net for them to be welcomed back into a school? So using practices of restorative justice has taken off like wildfire. It's just unimaginable, I think, to anyone at the endowment that we had no idea how young people clutch on to having these circles where they can mediate situations among themselves. So again, very eager to have the tools to be able to have those difficult conversations. Boys and men of color, we have a strong thread through all of our work around boys and men of color and the opportunities. Again, we see that as one major lifting the profile of how too frequently we dispose of certain parts of our, certain people in our population, and how sometimes we don't invest in human capital. And so again, we see that in terms of changing the narrative there. We think leadership development and engaging with systems leaders is critically important. Comprehensive supports, when we think about what that looks like. School-based health centers, many in California, there's now a big movement, especially with ACA, and I'm sure in many parts of the country, where there's many school-based health centers. And so what we've done is when we work with groups, groups have said, you know what, we noticed that boys in particular are not accessing health services on campus. So through the work that we're funding in several sites, young men are invited before the clinic is even built or open to kind of have their voice in terms of what would make a welcoming clinic on campus that would be relevant. What are the relevant services that they would like to see at those clinics? So again, just kind of turning the head to the audience in terms of what do young people want and see. Another big area of investment was, you know, and I think Brian will probably, you know, is a guru in that area around opportunity and cultural competency and access. So we know for many years, long list of literature, all of the problems that happen when you have lack of language access to healthcare delivery systems, and also issues of cultural competency. So one of our ACA investments is to develop what we call a grow your own approach in terms of health career pathways, really bringing together local health systems. It could be the FQHC, hospitals, you know, other employers to the table, along with schools and other stakeholders, local business, to really work together to help grow their own healthcare workforce in a very local area. When it comes to land use, yeah, it's a lot. So community has really pointed out that there are many points. It's not just one strategy or one issue that addresses violence prevention. Land use, critically important. Again, there are many parks in these communities where we work that, you know, have the same signs that Rachel had on her slide where, you know, it's a passive park, so you cannot play, essentially. It's telling the kids they put stone furniture right in the middle of these parks, so it's very intentional. Or, you know, they just don't invest in the upkeep of certain parks. General plan updates. I mean, again, we have at least 7 sites in California that are working on general plan updates because, again, folks critically understand is how you plan a city is critically important to the health of that community. Living streets, sort of taking ownership of streets. Some of the communities have overtaken because there's lack of green space, alley space. So they're saying, we want to reclaim alleys so that we can have, you know, show films, animate the space with family and kids, clean it up so that we can own that particular space. Gang injunctions, community again told us, you know, that doesn't work. We really need to figure out that maybe that particular tool that law enforcement has is having unintended consequences. Creating violence prevention collaboratives that brings together law enforcement, education folks, community organizations, as well as residents and young people. So I'm going to go through this quickly so that and there's a few other slides I'd like to go through. But gentrification and displacement, again, another major area that's come out in several of our sites where communities are feeling pressured and being pushed out of their communities. Public transit, again, another area where young people in a couple of our sites have mentioned that they're late to school because public transportation is not quality transportation. So as a result, they can get a truancy ticket or eventually get pushed out of school. Job training and reentry. In prevention, again, sort of having a health equity framework, wellness centers, co-locating upstream prevention services close to clinical services is also another area. And in California, another particular important area is also undocumented health care coverage because there's many mixed status families, and ensuring that everybody has access to health care is seen as an important issue. So going into sort of the grassroots strategies, you know, again, as I mentioned early, there's a large body of evidence that shows that when individuals are engaged in issues that are critically important to them, it has a really beneficial effect on how they feel and on their health. So when you have control over your life, over decisions, it really has an impact on health. Again, when young people are engaged, if you can think of anybody that you may know, Martin Luther King or Dolores Huerta or any larger-than-life social justice person, they sort of had an engagement early on in their life that really drove them to work and be productive in society. And so we see that element in young people in particular, that having that purpose and vision in dealing with neighborhood issues can really be transformative for them. So what we've seen so far in our Building Healthy Community sites is that when youth participate in groups, they have a lot of success in terms of activities, public presentations. What we've also heard from the young people is that when they get involved with local issues, they get involved because they want to make a difference. And then they stay in organizations because they still want to make a difference. I mean, it's like a no-brainer, is that when young people are engaged in productive activities, they're all in with two feet. Fostering early wins, what we've noticed, and I'll talk a little bit more about what those specific wins are, but these are big aggregate areas. So part of our work is really to encourage communities to think about early wins. What can they achieve in a short period of time so that there becomes a catalyst for greater excitement and movement? So there's been a lot of focus on engagement in parks, recreation, transportation, many other collaboratives that have gone on. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about Santa Ana. In Santa Ana, Orange County, about 90% Latino community, essentially when they came up in the planning process, they prioritized immigration as an important area. And for a health foundation, we sort of took a step back and said, we got to think about how and what does that mean, because we're looking at local place solutions. And they came back to us and they said, guess what? You know what? We know what's going on at the federal level, may or may not be able to influence it, but in our local community, every Friday, Saturday, there are police stops in the community. And so when you have a father that's driving and he doesn't have a driver's license and he hasn't been drinking, immediately his car is towed. So that has an impact on the family income. So we, as a coalition of faith leaders, of immigrants, of folks in the community, we think for community safety and community livelihood that there needs to be a moratorium or a conversation on stopping those areas where they check cars. And as a result of the coalition building, they were able to get that on the table and then a moratorium. Although they didn't get everything they wanted, but what they did get was that at minimum there would be a two-hour wait so that the person could call somebody who had a driver's license to pick up their car. So in that sense, for the community, that was sort of a little opening of the door. And then they found space for other areas. A big area as a result of this was led to the Boys and Men of Color work in place in violence prevention. The young person, there's a young person that it took him a while to get engaged with Building Healthy Communities work. He was a street vendor selling fruit and kind of walked around, saw what was going on, and then finally, you know, with encouragement, folks brought him in. And part of his resistance was he was undocumented, was struggling to finish school, had to help support his family, put food on the table. But once he started making friends and found a space where he belonged, he's now the leader and voice of the Boys and Men of Color work in Santa Ana. So again, it's just amazing the leadership skills and development that happens over a very short period of time. In Long Beach, another example was when we started our Building Healthy Communities work, Long Beach has the largest Cambodian refugee population in California, and I think pretty much in the rest of the country. And so when we started out our work, immediately it was noticeable that Cambodians were not at the table in terms of decision-making, because we wanted to ensure that it was an equitable table so that all groups could come and participate. So Khmer Girls in Action, I highly recommend you look up this group. They're just so amazing group of young people who really take on and use arts and culture, use their sort of tragic history to be able to transform and deal with issues that young people are facing in terms of the multiple traumas, historical traumas, that come from, you know, the Khmer Rouge and poverty and living in the United States. So they've really opened up a space that has taught many other groups to build up their muscle in terms of what does it mean for school push-up for Cambodians. And if you have a chance, Maria Hinojosa from PBS produced a small segment on Khmer Girls in Action, so I highly recommend it. It's by the numbers. It's on web streaming live. We supported that, and that really sort of helps tell the story of trauma, healing, and culture, and push out of Cambodians. Boys and Men of Color Work, I'm going to go through this fast because I think I only have 3 minutes left. But in California, we sort of mobilized. We didn't see the Boys and Men of Color Work or the what we call now our Sons and Brothers work as sort of separate from our Building Healthy Communities work in terms of our place-based work, but really saw it as being woven in. And so what we found in a very short time is that it was really, it really struck a chord among young people. And as a result of the movement there, there have been 5 reform bills that went up to the state. LA Unified School District, which is the second largest school district in the United States, stopped willful defiance, which is a huge deal, because if you're a kid in a classroom, and we know from public health that if you have sort of multiple traumas, you could be acting out in class, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're being disruptive or bullying. It's just there's so many issues that these young people are dealing with, and a teacher could immediately put you out of the classroom without any discussion. And so, again, young people really figuring out what are those pathways to the school-to-prison pipeline. And so willful defiance was one of those. Further work with systems leaders was really to, again, put moratoriums on truancy tickets. Again, very youth-driven, youth voice, but led up to state policy change. In Oakland, it's led to a movement around young people really participating at a citywide strategy. In Fresno, in the Central Valley, the school district has put $1 million towards positive school supports, which, again, was a major achievement of what young people wanted. I'm going to go through this. Sorry about that. I didn't realize it would be so loud. But when we talk about changing the narrative, we know that if you can't read by third grade, you have school suspensions, kids that are in the juvenile or touch the foster care system, it's just some of those drivers to the pathway. And so what we like to see is sort of what are those positive pathways? You know, making sure that kids read third grade reading level, that they're graduating from high school, that they're having mentors, and they're thinking of college and success. So again, really changing that frame of opportunity for all. So changing that narrative in terms of what is possible in community is great. So these are just a few clips from a skate park that young people, with the support of the Tony Hawk Foundation, I used to be a skateboarder at one point, believe it or not, but important in terms of what kids wanted and what they wanted to see in their community. And it was really fabulous, and it sort of led them, the same group, to work on other campaigns. So once they received about $4 million to build a park plaza, they moved on to advocate for bus passes for all young people. Another area in terms of reclaiming art and culture, if you have a chance, if you go to the Departures website at KCET, you will be able to see a lot of stories that have come up from many of the places. So this is what we're doing in each of the Building Healthy Community sites. So building power, sustaining, advocating is a big piece of community change. We think that scaling up means that partnering deeper with community is critically important for a health justice movement. What you all can do is make sure that there's spaces for people to convene. The power to convene is just so critically important. Technical assistance support that's strategic, that really helps folks move along is important. Building strong relationships are important. So I think I am out of time. So thank you very much.